Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley, joined by Van Gelder and Crack. Yet again, we are apologizing for another long, unexpected break. But see, I'm even tired of all these apologies for going on breaks and stuff. But me, all I want to talk about, we already people know that there's a lot going on. But once they make the breaks more annoying for you people, BC, every other podcast will go on break, nothing will happen though. We alone, we will go on break. Man United fired my manager. Chelsea fired my manager. Real Madrid fired my manager. AFCON drama. Plenty things. So now it look like we've missed so much. We've missed so many things. We know, like, it doesn't mean we go on a break for a very, very long time. But so many things just they happen that it just they pile up and then they make you feel more agitated. Because I don't know who else they go on break and all these crazy things they happen. But Charlie, we are back. What can we say? Better late than never. So, Charlie, my God, how's it going?
Charlie, I'm good. Happy New Year to our listeners. We not say we go out, Che, but Charlie, boys too grow. We boys get this way for true. So, hey.
Here we go for the again. People on audio, crack come in full Shatawale gear. So,
this balaclava, you go away. Why?
Charlie Crack also. It's gonna be a dangerous episode. The way it is,
sub zero.
Inshallah, as not fans, don't worry this episode.
So, Charlie, as Cracker said, we jump right into it. And obviously, we are going to start with Arsenal against Man United, where Man United just handed Arsenal their first home defeat of the season. Charlie, as you can see me there, like, I've not been able to stop smiling since the full-time whistle. So, and as somebody who has been supporting the club, that under our previous manager who was fired, like I was talking about, United didn't win back-to-back games in a year. Now, a new manager comes, a new caretaker manager comes. In his first two games, he's beating the top two in the league. Like, there's so many things being said right now about Carrick. Some of us, we are trying not to get carried away because we've seen these things happen before. Not under Amorim, because he'd be the one manager who gets new manager bounce. But we've seen Ole come and get a new manager bounce. Actually, if you think about it, it just be Ole who get a new manager bounce like that too. Because Ten Hag lost his first two games. Amorim came and drew against Ipswich. So, like, Ragnik, I don't even count him on because I don't even remember. I think he drew us. He didn't win his first two games. I think he won one, he drew one or something. So, new manager bounces aren't as common to Man United fans as it may seem. So, Charlie, make a start with Crack. How are you feeling right now? Are we giving a job to Amorim? Are we trying to keep ourselves level-headed? Because that since my tongue won't talk, when my brain is stop him.
Correct yourself.
What do they mean by giving a job to Amorim?
He mentions your name. Hey, correct yourself.
Crack. Hey, I said, Carrick. Give the job to Carrick.
Why are we going to give the job to Crack?
See, I'm excited. Not my fault. I also make very rusty. Crack. How do you feel about Carrick?
Honestly, let him sign the contract today. Give it to Michael Carrick today. Give him 2 years, 1 year review, subject to performance. See, give him a 2 years contract right now and review after a year.
You get another 7 months for us.
Not now. When it's confirmed, you will hear for us. Don't worry. I'm consulting the gods. I said, give it to Michael Carrick right now. Like, people don't understand that when we say these things, it's not like we are, just caught in the moment. You know, yes, I know once we start playing Champions League or Carrick has come in the time where we are playing once a week and all those things, right? But it goes beyond just the number of times he play in a week. When you have a legend that has done his time, right? Yes, he hasn't coached a big club and all, but he still left United unbeaten in a short spell. He has come back and he's still unbeaten. He went to Middlesbrough. He transformed the team and all of those things. What happened was he lost players to injuries and also he started losing and all of that. But under Ole, he was the coach. Ole was the manager. He was the one training them on the pitch with the tactics and all of those things. And you can see it in most of our big matches and so on. But yes, things didn't go on well because his last season became more of a Ronaldo fair, which I do understand. When Ole was sacked, he took over in his 3 games. He didn't lose, right? So when you have somebody that understands the club, that is a good coach, that the players respect, sometimes it's more than enough. Why can't we give it to him when we had Zidane move from Madrid junior side to the main, to the senior team when he hadn't done anything? Why can't we do that when we saw Pep Guardiola from Barca B to the first team? Why can't we take a chance on him? If you look at the coaches that right now everybody is talking about, that they are going to say that, hey, the coaches on the market, more names, why? What has the big coaches done for us? The only coach that won trophies for us was Mourinho. They still ended badly. We have a very young team, whether people like it or not. Averagely, we are signing young. Yeah, I'm serious. You can go and check out this one. If you take Casemiro, I'm serious. Take Casemiro and Luke Shaw out. Casemiro, Bruno, and Luke Shaw.
Maguire.
If you add Maguire, you need to add Maguire 4. 6-4, it's 60% young. Go to our bench. You might not observe. You've not observed. Go check my Messi Mount to top 30. Go check Messi Mount, Sesko. The players and they want to bench. Messi Mount, Sesko. Even this guy, Ugarte. Go check all of them at my ages. Right? When this guy came, like when Sir Jim took over, they were looking at a long-term project. So if you study, we know they buy anybody will be 25 and above. Right? And that is the trajectory they'll still be on. So you need somebody that they grew up watching, somebody they respect, somebody that can like understand player management and profiling. That is, you see what Xavi Alonso faced at Madrid, right? If you come and you want to be too tactical, sometimes that is not what helps in big teams, like mega teams like Man United and Madrid and so on. Player management, player profiling, knowing when to select this team and all, being fluid, being flexible. Not my way or no way, you don't really want anything. People talk about Fergie, they give Fergie time. Look, Fergie's track record before coming to United, Fergie still struggled. They believed in Fergie. Fergie started winning before he took over United and everything was going through Fergie. People like to pick and choose the part of history they love and they want to focus. But every club still has a DNA. I know people will talk about NI United DNA and this one, but every club has a DNA. DNA, moving kids from academy to the senior team, giving them time, building them up, giving them, motivating them, and not just selling them, pushing them away, and blah, 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 and meshing them. Carrick can walk into the dressing room because he has the respect and he can tell you, bro, I've done it. I've been here. Listen to me. Half time, you see him talking to the player that he didn't start. Full time, you see him talking, doing this. And those are the things that need. Not calling your players out in press conference saying that all your players are not good. You need certain type of player to play this particular formation. Then you win ego match. You play 4-back, you win, then you go back to 5-back because you want to prove a point. No, this is pro. It doesn't help. Mourinho's time, one thing that went against Mourinho was recruitment. Mourinho finished second the next season and give him Dalot or somebody else or like that. They didn't give him proper players. He wanted to move on from Martial and things. The club was like, nah, they want to have Martial and things. It became a player coach struggle. So in Mourinho, I don't really talk about his time a lot. A lot of things went wrong. That management was different. Even this management, in as much as I don't even believe in them, but the recruitment has been top-notch. So when Amorim, you have such a team of talented players. Listen, the second top goal scorer last season, you have the second and third. Or if correct me if I'm wrong, Mbeumo was second, right? And
Mbeumo was second, and then Kunya was fourth or fifth.
Like either they were top five, right? They buy those players for you, and you are still shouting, and you still prefer to have an extra man in midfield to defend against who, your father. Even when we are chasing games, you bring an extra defender on. Defender for defender. Every game, defender for defender. Defender for defender. Defender for defender. You think Dogu's injury, if it was Amorim, Sesko would have come on? No, you would have brought Mazraoui to come and still play five back. That is crazy. You see, in-game management is important. Man management is important. Nobody said tactics is not important, but when you dwell too much, follow these players, when you come and do tactics, my way of knowing always, you might lose them. And you can't lose them. Playing your most creative player in central midfield, Bruno Fernandes. Why? He should be the one chasing other central midfielders. Like so many things, and Carrick is just doing the basics right. He has brought experience in Steve Holland and things, surrounded himself with that. But the most important thing is having a combination of being a man manager and a coach as well. Not many people will have that. So me, I commend him for what he has done in a short while, because I haven't seen this in a long while. Yes, you might say that I'm in the sky high, or everything is going like us, we are winning it. But it's beyond that. We know how we suffered. We know what we've seen. Right? Yes, I'm all for, at the end of the season, they should assess all the coaches and make the right choice. But bro, if it continues like this, gets us into the Champions League, it will be hard to not go with him. It will be hard for you not to give him a chance. Because our team, I always say that this team, you know, bad though. We've recruited well. We just need a couple of more players in certain positions. Then we are okay. Casemiro is going. We need to buy another DM. We need to buy another CM. We need to buy another attacker. Because Zexi too be going. Ugarte, we'll sell him. We need to buy two midfielders. Go back to the defense. We have a good defense. Maybe if Maguire, we don't retain him. I want us to keep Maguire. But if we don't keep him, we need another center back. So petty things. And we are okay. Because having Bermo, having Cunha, having Bruno, having Ahmad, to be frank, how many teams in the Premier League can compete against this attack? It's not about me being a United fan. Just check the league. How many people them are front three? Cunha, Mbeumo, Bruno. Add Ahmad. I wouldn't, Sesko is still new, so I'll put Sesko out. But we have Cunha and Mbeumo who are Premier League experienced. They are good players in the Premier League. How many people can compete? How many people can say that? Mbeumo, first United player to score against the four out of the big six teams in his first season. All this, then you get there, you say you want extra man in midfield, extra defender in midfield to do what? Are you a criminal? Who is chasing you? Foolish coach.
So for me, I want to touch a bit on the game itself, because it was a very, even though in the first half, people might say that United didn't play that well, because truly, we didn't see much of the ball in the first half. Arsenal were pinning us back. But I think there was an element of controlled pressure to it, because there are other games or there are previous times when we win games like this and it's more of the keeper just keeping us in the game, making saves left and right and all of that. But in this case, Arsenal, even though they were dominant in terms of possession, they didn't actually create that much. I think in the whole first half, their only shot on target was the goal, which was an own goal or something. So, like, it may seem like they were just bombarding us with something, but when you actually look at things, they weren't creating much, particularly from open play. And in the second half, it got even more apparent when they started purposely trying to win corners. Like, then get close to the corner side, then just try to take the ball, hit your player, then my leg, then just take win some corner. Like, Arsenal, yes, they scare me in a lot of ways, but I think they still have a lot to work on in terms of their open play. But this title, I mean, we've been saying it for a long time that this title is theirs to lose because there's nobody else really trying to win it. Man City are just not good enough. And apart from Man City, there's like a gap between Arsenal, Man City, and the rest at the moment. So it's more of they are just going to take it by default rather than win it in the way that we've seen other teams win it. But yeah, like Crack said, it was very refreshing to not see a centre-back coming on at the 70th minute for no reason. Like, standard, every game, you see a centre-back being brought on for another centre-back. It's not even really much of a tactical change or a shift or anything. It's just like bringing on one body for another body. You don't really see the change that it brings into the game. So all these things have, like, we've suffered for a year. It's very refreshing to see all of these things. One thing that I'm just enjoying the most is seeing Mainoo back in the team. Remember that at the point where Amorim was fired, Mainoo hadn't started a league game in this season. And that alone is a very crazy thing to think about when you're talking about somebody who started a Euros final at the age of 19. And now there's a manager who is telling you that he's not good enough to even play more than 45 minutes. Like, he made it seem like if Mainoo plays even just half of a match, we are going to be opened up. There's going to be no protection for the defense. Like, he tried to gaslight us about Mainoo in so many ways. And now you're seeing how much Carrick values his contribution to the team. Because one thing Mainoo does that not many other people in our team can do is that he's able to receive the ball under pressure and lay it off to people who are not under pressure. And that thing alone gives you so much relief when you are being pressed very hard by another team. So these are things that people might not value because everybody just looks at midfielders in the context of this guy, he be serious ball winner. He's a tackler. He wins plenty balls. This guy, he the assist, he the score. So the people who are kind of in the middle, people don't really put a lot of value on them because, like, they are not really, they don't really do anything that is tangible in their eyes that shows up on the stat sheets. They are not giving goals. They are not giving assists. They are not being the recording 10 interceptions a game and all of that stuff. But Mainoo does one of those very important jobs that just goes unnoticed in the team. So I'm very happy that Carrick actually sees the importance in what Mainoo does. Casemiro to have a good game as usual. Casemiro, yeah, is one of the people who may I've always stood behind it because, tell you, the quality that he's brought to us since he came, like, I can't think of many players who could have done such a job. And I'm saying this because earlier this week, it was announced that he's going to be leaving the club at the end of the season. His contract is not going to be renewed and they're not going to be triggering the one-year extension option in the contract. And for me, like, when I think about the number of midfielders who we've signed, at least in the last 10 years, I can only think of maybe Bruno and Casemiro who have come and done, like, who have proven their worth to us. He's just been a quality addition. His leadership, the way he wins balls, particularly aerially, like in defense, when we are facing corners, basically, he wins so many balls that goes unappreciated. So it's one of the things that is even going to cause a huge problem for us when he leaves because he wins so many balls for us. And, like, it even takes me to this conversation about teams always wanting to sign young players and not putting value on players who have gone beyond a certain age. Because you see, like, once you've passed 28, 29, you are washed. There's nothing else you can bring. But looking at what Casemiro has brought to us in the 4 years that he's been here, and I look around the league and see all the big money midfield signings, there are not many who I can say have done a better job than Casemiro. And the ones who have done a decent job, like, there are some who have come in and out. For you to do it for 4 years, like, I just want teams to stop looking at long-term planning and all of that all the time. Sometimes look at the present, what someone can bring to you in the present. I don't think it's a coincidence that after Casemiro came, we broke our six-year trophy drought. And I think he even scored in the game where we broke the drought. That was the Carabao Cup final. So shout out to Casemiro. Like, I really, really appreciate the job he's done for us. Maguire, these two games against Man City and Arsenal, he's been very, very good. Even though he's somebody who I've not been his biggest fan, but now. Like, I'm beginning to appreciate more and more the job he does. Like, I don't mind him staying on if he's on lower wages and he accepts that he's just a squad player. But he did a good job. Lisandro Martinez, to his passing outs from the back, the way he eases pressure on the defense is just incredible to see. Like, it was just a good performance all around. And Mbeumo, for example, I wouldn't say he's done exceptionally well in the past two games against Man City and Arsenal, but he still scored in those two games. And one thing about him is that he's super efficient in front of goal. Like, once he gets a big chance, you know that's like 80% of the time he's going to score. And there are not many attacking signings that we've made that are like that. A lot of the attacking signings we've made is either they are very young players who are still trying to find their feet and they become a struggle, or they are just not output machines. Mbeumo is an output machine. If you are talking about technical ability, dribbling and all of that, Ahmad is above him. But when it comes to just output efficiency and all of that, like, you wouldn't find many players who are better than him. So I'm just happy that, like, we are diversifying the type of attackers we sign. It's not always that we go and look for flashy players. Sometimes the people who just do a job are good enough for what they are trying to do. Cunha too, he came on against Man City. He had an impact when he came off the bench. Today too, he had a very huge impact by scoring the winning goal. And I knew that he was probably going to make an impact if he comes off the bench, because he's one of those players who you can just tell that he hates being on the bench. So the moment he comes on, he's just trying to impress and trying to prove the manager wrong. I didn't think, even though I knew he was going to make an impact off the bench, I couldn't have imagined what he actually came to do. Like, that was a super goal, brilliant goal. And it's not something that is a fluke for him, because last season, he was the player who scored the most goals from out of the box. So this is something that he's known to do. So I'm just happy that it's like, I'm seeing a manager who is profiling his players well. He's not putting square pegs in round holes. He's not forcing fullbacks to play center back and wingers to play right wing back. Like, sometimes we keep saying this thing. Sometimes football is more simple than these managers make it seem. Like, sometimes just put players in the right position and give them the chance to just show off their strengths. It's not every day I'm trying to demand more from you than me. Like, I want to put you in a difficult situation so that you can prove yourself and all of that. Sometimes, Charlie, just put me in the right situation where I can flourish and show my skill set. That'll be all. That's just all we're asking for. So, yeah, it was a really, really good, good performance in terms of the fact that, like, we struggled to keep the ball in a lot of areas of the pitch. Like, in the first half, I think the 30th minute or something, we were yet to complete a pass in the final third. So in that regard, like, I wouldn't say it was a really, really good performance. The Man City performance was a really, really good performance. This one was a good performance. But considering the fact that we were playing Arsenal away, you can't really expect much. You were never going to dominate Arsenal at home. So just for the fact that we've won, that one there is enough for me. And like Crack was saying, like me, I'm just trying not to get carried away with this whole kind of thing, because, again, it's very easy to draw the parallels with Ole and how he also started. Even though in Ole's start, I would say that he didn't beat any top team, and that is new manager bounce run, apart from the PSG in the Champions League. But in the league, he won, was it 12 of his first 13 or 11 of his first 4? Like, he won a lot of games. But the biggest team he beat in that run was Tottenham. Tottenham, Van Gelder, you go tell me all about Tottenham and how they feel about them and their reputation. No, nobody they downplay Tottenham and hate on Tottenham past Van Gelder. So that was the biggest team he beat in the league in that run. The PSG, like, if we are being honest, there was a huge element of luck in terms of the penalty that we got. And like, these two performances, I don't want to get carried away and say it's the best performance I've seen in this number of years or whatever. But like, it's a long time since, first of all, in any case, Arsenal, I don't think we've beaten Arsenal at the Emirates in over 6 years or something. So that one alone will tell you. In fact, since the Mourinho days, Mourinho was the last person to beat Arsenal at the Emirates. So that should tell you how long ago it was. So when we are talking about how good of a result it is, it's not like we are just saying it out of anything. Like, there's actual statistics to prove that we've not done this in a while. So yeah, like amazing results, and I'm just eager to see how we carry on from here, because sometimes, like I keep saying, the big games, as much as a good result, in the big games, sometimes there's also an element of self-motivation from the players. It's really against like the mid-table clubs who are very strong that sometimes you really see where you are. Next up, we have Fulham, who are also one of those strong mid-table teams that can be very tricky. So I'm eager to see how we take that one. Maybe that one will tell me more about the team than these two results. So I'm just trying my best to stay level-headed, but at the moment, things are really looking positive. But Van Gelder, we've been dick riding for too long. We want to hear what somebody from the outside thinks about Man United at the moment, because you cannot deny that these are two impressive results.
No, very, very impressive results. I think last week's results really, really impressed me. And again, I don't know which part of that is tactics, which part of that is just players motivated to show they are better than they've been, you know, actually. But nobody can deny that last week, especially against Manchester City, it was very impressive. Like you didn't beat, you battered them. Like City had less than one XG. It was like, I was like, hey.
They said that was the lowest XG defeat that Pep has had in his time in England.
That's how you know that United were very, and it could have been worse. You know, I think Kofi tweeted, shout out Kofi tweeted. I think he tweeted that Carrick coached the 5-0. So for him, anything.
Even true.
And I don't dispute, because you had what, like two or three offside goals.
And even the last one was very shaky.
But was very shaky. Yeah, it. Exactly. So for me, I think that was very impressive. But today, I'm glad, because when you tell Arsenal fans that they are not that good, they don't like to hear it, because they don't like the truth. And for a team that is hailed as the best team in England, the best team in Europe, and they probably arguably are, right? They are not that, like, you watch them and you are like, is it an off day? But then that is how they play almost all the time, so you can't really tell. When they went 1-0 up, I expected that they would kick on and, you know, kind of basically take you guys to the sword, right? And get a second and then become comfortable and take it up from there. But they weren't. They were prodding and like trying to do something, but not really. Then you equalize. And then you had, even though statistically they won't call it, you had three big chances after you equalized before the halftime. And so it's a bit of a, for me, it's a bit of a shock. Like, okay, they've equalized and they that were not, you know, playing without the ball are the ones that created the more impressive chances. Then it gets to the second half, and what a finish by Dogo, by the way. Really, really nice goal. I don't know. Maybe he's actually not a wing back and he's a left wing guy. He's in his profile.
Actually, the manager of his former team in Italy, I haven't forgotten which team he came from. Lecce. He actually said that Dogu is a winger. He's a right winger.
And yeah.
Yes. He said you see his quality the best when he plays as a winger. So he doesn't understand why United are using him more as a defense, left back and whatever. So I don't know what scouting reports we used to sign him.
But the scouting reports, everybody... I remember this because Chelsea fans at the time kept saying that he says his idol is Hazard and he was a Chelsea fan. So instead of buying Hato or one of these other left backs we wanted to buy, we should rather go for him. And that Man United have picked up a generational left back. So it's a bit tough for me, because if everybody in the game knows you as a left back and it's just your manager, your previous manager that knows you as a winger, then it's a toss up. But we know as a left back, he's not good. That at least we can put that to bed. That as a defender, he's not good. But as a winger, I think that he's playing really, really well, getting into the right spaces. He's very good in like tight combinations and whatnot. And the goal was really, he took the goal really well. And then Arsenal just, I don't know, every 4 seconds they want a corner, every 4 seconds. And I really, really dislike the way they play their corners, where they crowd out the goalkeeper, where they kind of like push and shove. I remember when they played Chelsea in the Carabao Cup semi-final first leg at Stamford Bridge, their first goal, that's exactly what they did. I'm not disputing that Robert Sanchez fluffed the ball, but he fluffed the ball because, what's his name? Trossard had his elbow at his back. But VAR didn't say anything. For some weird reason, if Chelsea, Man United, Fulham, Sunderland, or somebody did that same thing, that would be considered a foul. Somehow, if Arsenal do it, it's not a foul. It's play. I remember they played Tottenham, and maybe a year or two ago, and Ben White was removing the glove of the goalkeeper. And somehow, that is not considered an infringement for you to call a foul for the corner to be over. And they scored from that.
Honestly, Arsenal's corner tactics or whatever it is, I think England is the only country where you get away with these things. Because in other countries, they give way more protection to the keepers. But in England,
they don't get away with it in the Champions League. So they get upset a lot in the Champions League when they get called for fouls. Because they're like, the ref is biased. Why is that a foul? How is that a foul? Because it's a foul. The referees in England are the ones who are daft and don't take the fouls. Because for some weird reason, it's like if you take the foul, right now, they are, instead of concentrating on the fact that they've lost, they are saying it is 3 lucky goals. Meanwhile, you are the one that scored one own goal and one corner kick that you crowded at the keeper and it came, the ball hits your player and it hit another player and then they went in. But somehow, it is United that got 3 lucky goals, where 2 of them were from outside the box. Those are lucky. That's who am I? What do I know? I'm not. But I think Carrick looks good. As you said, we will know the value of his coaching when he plays against teams like Fulham, Bournemouth. You know, those kind of teams where they are not really challenging, but they're going to make you look good. Like, if you want to win, you have to work for your win. We'll see more from there. But I think so far, he's been very impressive. I mean, it does help that he has one game a week. I mean, we can't get away from that. The fact that you guys are going to play 40 games this entire season, it is... I don't know what to say.
The
it's
person
criminal.
Who put us in that situation, he said it's going to be an advantage for us. But we never saw that advantage under him.
At the beginning, the thought was that, at least you have one game a week, maybe with regards to the Premier League. And then when the cup competitions come, you have at most 2 games a week. Then he lost both cup competitions in the first round. And you literally can't play more than 40 games this season. Literally. Because 2 cup games and 38 Premier League games. That's it. Your season is ended. So, yes, of course, there is that advantage. Carrick has the time on the training pitch. So, between now and next week, he has no matches to think about except the Fulham one. Maybe Fulham will go play some Europa or they will go play some cup competition or something. They will tap, you will tap Carrington. Coach, 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 coach. And people don't know this, but... the assistant that he brought, the former Chelsea manager, was Hall.
Steve Holland.
Steve Holland is a very good coach. Well, not a coach as in, like, if you put him first team, you could hammer sack him after 4 matches. But as an assistant, as a training pitch manager, coaching the tactics, putting the boys through their drills, he's a very, very good coach. He they handled Chelsea set piece. Then he did do the assistant coaching plus set pieces. Then you don't go hire this thing where right everybody won't do.
Specialist set piece.
See, Arsenal
and also apparently he's a very good defensive organizer.
Yes, they manage Chelsea when a defensive shape and out of possession play. Then he did Ibe to the device on our set piece and those kind of things. Then usually the first team managers. First assistant or second assistant or whoever they come with will do the attack in possession play because that one is more, you know, varied to the maybe whatever tactics that the manager wants to use. But out of possession, defensive shape, set piece, that was Steve Holland's back. That's why, what's his name? Former England manager came to take him when he was going to England. So that's what the job he was also doing for England and stuff like that. At the end of the day, I think he's put together a very good backroom staff. I think it will help him a lot. As for Arsenal, I don't know what to say about them. To me, this is how they play every week. This is Arsenal. I don't think we've seen anything today that is any different from everything.
Please be specific. This is Arteta's Arsenal.
That's what I mean.
This has never been the Arsenal I've known. This has never been the Arsenal.
No, like, but you see, whereas I understand where you're coming from. He's been their manager for the past 6 years. So this is Arsenal now. It's the same way like Chelsea, if you chop 25, then it'd be like, say, we don't if you see your this, they're not gonna sign you that. No matter how good you are, they will not sign you because that's your
club's philosophy. So that
right now this is their philosophy. Then go carry some guy be in specialty be throwings. Right. I'm not playing. No, I don't think.
Yeah.
They think I got like 2 or 3 weeks ago. Right now, if you say if drink and then them all go camp, then they can arrive to go. They go clean their ball. Then they do some things. They go throw up. What do I know?
See,
I mean, I get it. To win, you need to get every squeeze you can from every drop of margin that you can. But bro, maybe coach some attacking play first. You coach the attacking play first. Make we see attacking play, then you break down teams, you open them up. Then if you add these other things, but if they win the league, it will be such a disgrace because they would have won it off the back of set pieces, and it will annoy me so much. Honestly, because like I can't lie.
I think I saw this stat about the number of set pieces. The thing is, you see, when you say it, they make it seem like we are saying that all their goals come from set pieces. But the key thing is that most of the goals that they score to go ahead come from set pieces. So after that, and when the other team is forced to open up, that's when they score you from open play. So
when they don't score the first goal from set piece. Set piece, they draw or lose.
Yes, that's where the issue comes
from. Was it last week that they drew? They drew last week, didn't they? Yes, they drew with, was it Forest? They drew with Forest. And I saw the Atlanta Tactical saying this, that whenever they are not able to get ahead with their set, because Forest to be very Sundice team, they can't score set piece against them. You know. So whenever they are not able to open the first goal with a set piece, or sometimes it'll not be direct set piece, maybe they will go corner, you go head them out, then the second
now
they
call action, them, the Tacticals get a new name for that one, it'll be second phase set piece.
Sorry.
The first phase, we have to deliver the corner. If you head it out and it comes back, that'll be the second phase of the set piece.
Do
you know my problem? Like, we've watched the league and we've seen how, like, what's the name? The teams that won the league in the past, right? I've never seen them without a single player even score 15 goals. Do you know, like, Madueke, Saka, Odegaard, Goretzka. Yeah, I said Goretzka. Jokeres. If you combine their goals, it's not even up to 10. Their leading goal scorer is Jokeres with 7 goals. The rest of the goals is scattered across Moreno and the defenders and Rice and
Gabriel Dentins.
Because only set pieces. Like, it's only, it was against, was it Spurs, that this guy scored a hat-trick. And it wasn't from Eze, right? It was clear open play. How are you going to win the league by scoring more set pieces than open play? You don't have, like, you see the way Haaland, if he scored 20, 30 goals, Salah, if you do that, you go figure some one player where he did in the 20s or even close to the 20s. We won the league in was it 08, 09 when Ronaldo had 18 goals? That league was different. He and this guy, Anelka, right?
Anelka.
We've seen that. But then again, even with the 18 goals, you had Rooney and Sins chipping in 10, 12, like, this is atrocious. This is the way, like, even the season Leicester won it. Jamie Vardy, Mahrez. Like, you could count on big moments. Like, See, this is Yankasa. Mention five memorable games you remember from Arsenal. Right now, with the City, Leicester, you can mention five. Even five killer goals via disco. You can even mention the one against Liverpool, the volley. You can mention so many Mahrez against City. You can mention so many games at that time. How? Which kind of poverty league this? Like, make Arsenal working? And I'm so happy we brought it to 4 points. See, I would rather Villa to win the league. I'm telling you. If Pep Sev win, where they go, I don't care. But anybody aside Arsenal. Because why are you playing and you don't want to play nice? It's not even about nice football. Like, why are you always relying on set pieces? It makes the game so boring. It's like they are always waiting for it. It makes everything look some. The guy has bought defenders. So me, I know conceding will be hard. But why are you forgetting the other end of the pitch?
He's still buying defenders. If you leave him today, he goes and buy another defender. That striker he buys if he be defender.
Arsenal win the league and will be one of the worst winners ever. I'm telling you, ever since I started watching EPL. It'll be joke, it'll be cap. They'll be one of the worst ever. Like, bro, 2011, when we won, said we have Nani in double figures. Chicharito, Nani, Bevatov. Even our team, that team said wasn't that strong. That team wasn't even that strong. We don't feel move on from Sunday, Saka, Mane, and all those things. Bringing goals, yeah, and then all those things. Aguero, and all those things too. Jokeres, 7 goals in January. Then lead the league. Your highest goal scorer is 7. With 7 goals. Abba. And that one said, the guy not the player always. So imagine.
I think the funniest thing that proves the points you're making is that they might be the first team to win the title where they don't have any attacker being in the running for player of the season. Because if they win the title, all the front runners for player of the season from their end are going to be Declan Rice, Gabriel, like Raya, those people. But none of the attackers will probably be in the running for player of the season. I don't think there's anybody going to be a serious contender. But you can't say that about any previous title winner.
You see, and yeah. even if you talk about it, when you talk about it, they will break Vidic. The season Vidic won it. Go see the number of goals Ronaldo and Tim score. After Ronaldo left, when he won it again, this I'm saying, go see the number of goals Charito, Bebatov, and Nani Dempsey even scored that season. This is poverty. Like, this is poverty. Ah. Now, they don't deserve to be winners at all. I'm telling you, they don't deserve it. And I hate it. Like, see the corner. It's like a wrestling match. It's like Royal Rumble. It's not like they are playing corner where, you know, they work the things that, you know, short passes here, play short, do this. No, they are literally fighting your keeper. Which kind of dirty tactics is this? It's true. Kind of dirty, like, then they play like the Moroccans in the AFCON. What kind of dirty tactics is this?
Anyway, moving on to another team that has a new manager. Chelsea, also during our break, like I said, fired Enzo Maresca and replaced him with Liam Rosinha. Now, when that happened, a lot of people, including myself, were very amused, to say the least, because when you're talking about big club managers, Rosinha is not exactly the type of person who fits that image. But somehow, he's also managed to have a really good start. I'm still very skeptical about it because naturally, like, I just don't see it with him. Me, I don't go lie, I judge a book by its cover. And the cover, no, they look very good to me. So, at the moment, like, they've had a good start. I can't deny it. But, in fact, of all the results they've had so far, beating Crystal Palace away 3-0 today was a very, like, it was a huge statement of intent because everybody knows that Crystal Palace are one of the toughest teams to beat at Selhurst Park. So, Van Gelder, how do you feel about, first of all, this appointment and how he started life at Chelsea?
I'm not enthused about the appointment. I can't lie. He doesn't fill me with any confidence. Look, Maresca had his troubles and he had his problems and he had his injuries. But at some point, as a club, you have to sit down and see, we value more stability, you know, knowledge, know-how, and whatnot over all this constant change and you know, today, you then the manager. If you then every manager, you get different types of managers with different personalities, all of them, you then them fall out. Then it can't be the managers. Do you get what I mean? And in Chelsea, it's like the wrong people are empowered. So those hideous swings that we sporting directors, them people, they don't talk to the fans, they don't do any interviews, they don't do anything. If you hear, say, some player be there, he be young, where in club they ask for maybe 60 million. Let me give you an example. And here Chelsea are negotiating. Oh, massa, forget. Then we'll go take that player. Then we'll tell we later. This is the same thing that's happened. They told Maresca they didn't want to sign a centre back. Some way, somehow, when Rosinho came in, oh, yeah, we need a centre back. So they wanted to sign Jeremy Jacquet from Rennes. By all accounts, he's a fantastic footballer. And he's really, really good. Like, people rate him very highly. His on-the-ball stuff, off-the-ball, in the air, strong matrices as a defender. Then Rennes said they want more than a Man City paid for Doku, which means that they want a record transfer fee. That's when I knew we won't sign that boy. Maybe we will end up signing. Today, we've got to recall some of our centre-back from the one we gave to the Argentinian reporter we gave to boy, Dortmund. We've recalled him.
Are you recording him now?
Yeah, Ansomino. We've recalled Ansomino.
Then you put the can't worry Dortmund because he's been in incredible form for Dortmund this season. Hey, so.
It's not a player. It's not our fault. They should find their own player. I think that actually there's a rumor going around in Chelsea circles that what they are going to do is that they'll try to get the negotiations for Jacquet done, but to have him come in the summer where they can kind of stretch their books a bit more and whatever. Then they will bring Anselmino back, bring Mamadou Sarr back from Strasbourg and give Strasbourg Anselmino. Strasbourg fans are already angry at that because we've stolen their coach. Now, no. Again, Mamadou Sarr is a Chelsea player. He's on loan at Strasbourg. He's Strasbourg's starting centre-back. He knows Rosinho's system. So, in my mind, it makes sense. Bring him back. Let him play so that Rosinho can implement. Because, again, unlike Carrick, who has every week to himself, we are playing again on Wednesday or whatever. We are going to Napoli. We are going to Naples to play Napoli. We come back now, we go play the weekend. We come after that now, we then Arsenal. So he doesn't have enough time on training pitch. So the more tools he's already used before, that can help him implement his tactics on the pitch. Better it is. Whether that will work or not, I don't know.
My only question I have is that Anselmino is playing for Dortmund. Dortmund at the moment, they are second on the Bundesliga table. They are playing in the Champions League. So in terms of quality, in terms of high-level quality, wouldn't Anselmino be more prepared to fit into a Chelsea team than Mamadou Sarr?
Mamadou Sarr is the better defender, unfortunately. That is just the truth. He would have played, but because I remember we signed him right before the Club World Cup. He went to the Club World Cup with Chelsea, and then he saw pity minutes. That was one thing about Maresca I didn't really like. If Maresca doesn't like you as a player, maybe because you are not the person he's asked for or whatever, he will really treat you badly. And he will treat you like you're not a human being.
He's petty.
And he's petty. Yeah, so he won't play you. That's what he's done to... Yes, De Sassi is no good. And the club wants him off the books. But at least you don't have to banish him to go and play with under 21. Like, you don't have to banish... I don't like Sterling. I don't want him in the club. In fact, he's the reason why our wages are so high. He has a £350,000 a week contract that he got when Todd Boehly Dems came initially. And he doesn't want to go anywhere. There were bids for him from across Europe. And it is prerogative. He won't go. And if he won't go, he has a contract. So you have to pay. So they don't let him train at Cobham. He comes in after everybody, including women's team, have finished training. So he trains after 8 p.m. So they are making his life unbearable so that he doesn't stay back. But that football is a human institution. And these are some of the things you might feel like, oh, there's a class prerogative. But you see, if a club wants a player out, see the thing and they take Graham. If a player wants to leave and he goes on strike, then we vex. Say, how dare you? If we go. You see, these are the kind of things where if we double standards, we either bomb me. You see? But for Rosinho, I feel like he's a poor man's Maresca. I rate Maresca's tactical nuance highly. I think he's really on his way to the top. He has his naiveties, and it will take some time for him to iron those ones out. But I have no doubt in my mind, he will be a better manager, for instance, than Arteta. Tactically, he will be a better manager than Arteta. The problem is that this Mourinho guy, this guy, he won't do the things where elite managers do them positional play the things. But he not get that if something they happen, the sense go fit change them quick. Then I don't know. I don't trust him. He for me, for him to win me over, he has a lot of work to do, honestly. And I've not been impressed in his first four games. I think the most impressive match he's had so far is today. Even today, cry the first 30 minutes, there ain't no easy like that, Charlie. But maybe it will come as he plays, as the players adapt to his style of play, as they learn what he wants. Crack, what is it?
What if it's you guys, you are the bad luck?
It go flippy, say we will be the bad luck.
What if Chelsea fans are the bad luck? Because the way, how would I even put it? Collectively, they all don't like the guy. I have a feeling the guy will turn up well.
And let me tell you what, because Chelsea fans...
What they don't understand is, the guy is a yes man. In as much as he's a yes man, he's a coach. They brought him in not to come and challenge the board and things. But I always say that Chelsea strategy of buying good young players, it will benefit them in the long run. They just need good defenders. I've always said this. That's their only problem. They just need good defenders and a good keeper. That is their only problem.
Even the goalkeeper chef right now, Chelsea fans want to mind the change because this season, I don't lie, if you don't be Sanchez, like where would they?
But
like he's had one bozo match the whole season.
See,
and it was that game against Arsenal.
The reason why I think you need a good keeper is like you know quality of a team can mask a keeper's performance, right? Sanchez's bozo genes always comes when you guys need him the most. Haven't you studied? Like when Chelsea is trending upwards, that's when he will go and do some foolish thing, and then you guys will be panicking and all of those things. Like, you know, if you had a good team, like, you know, your John Terry team, the Lampard team, and those strong team, and you have a bozo keeper, you know, the quality can sometimes challenge. And then they'll control the keeper. But you don't have a leader in the back.
Onana in Inter Milan.
His flaws was marked by the team. Do you get it? Sometimes it happens like that. So I think the mere fact that Chelsea fans don't like the guy, I just believe he'll do well. I don't know.
Let me tell you,
he will do well.
Chelsea fans don't like him, not because he's a bad person. As for his tactical, he's not coached long enough for us to really know whether he's good tactically or not. They don't like him because they don't like the board or the ownership group and the board and everybody. So anybody that they see who gets along, when Maresca came, they didn't like him. Maresca, by winning two trophies, then brought Chelsea fans onto his side. Do you get what I mean? They started liking him after the Club World Cup. They're like, you know what? You know, maybe you are good. Now we like you. You know, and then they started attacking the... He said he the one defender. Why not the one back give up? He said the one defender. Why not the one? So, every time we were not doing well, even if it was Maresca's coaching naivety's coming through, the Chelsea fans will mask it and say, he asked for a defender. You didn't give him. Then we have to play Badia Shield. We have to play Tosin. Right now, the problem with Tosin, every time Tosin they play, we they get problem for back. Do you get what I mean? So, Chelsea fans, they always they search scapegoats. And this time, unfortunately, the scapegoat has landed on Liam's front. And they are like, he's doing too many interviews. If they make them, they get Amorim PTSD. So, make him stop. They do the interviews. Where he has to be, like, he has to be Englishman. He has to be black. Like, many, many things they contribute to where in the way, they don't really like him. I don't hate him. I just think, I'm just looking at him objectively. I don't know enough about you tactically. And I can't lie and say I watched enough Strasbourg to say, oh, I saw this. I didn't watch. So I don't know what I'm getting. With Maresca, I knew what I was getting. In big games, we'll be competitive. In the mid-table matches, it's a 50-50 toss-up. I don't know. Now he's beating Palace. He's lost to Arsenal. The biggest game he's had since he came in, he lost. The performance wasn't great. The tactics on the day, like Arsenal, they didn't struggle. But again, there were two errors by Robert Sanchez. So you can't really tell. So let's see. Me, I want to see what he does when we play against Napoli, for instance, in midweek. And then next week, when we play Premier League. And then when we play Arsenal second leg at the Emirates. Is he brave? What's going to happen? Like, again, there's too many happening around the club. If they want to bring Mamadou Sarr, recall him today. And then have the discussion and send Anselmino to Strasbourg. What be his name? Strasbourg are okay. They've given them a good manager in... what's his name? Oh, this former Wolves, the my coach.
Gary O'Neill.
Yeah, good manager. He's won 2-2. He's happy. The first game, he won 5-1 or 5-0 or whatever. Second game, 2-0. He beat local derby. He won. So, I think they are currently playing his third match. They are good. He'll be fine. Do you get what I mean? I just don't know where we are at.
But are you not concerned about your whole this whole project that you're doing? Because I know you guys have said, like earlier Kak was saying, that this Chelsea strategy of buying young players and everything is going to work and everything. But I'm not exactly sure that I agree. And I'm not even sure that the aim of this project is even to have a successful team. Because for me, I think the project is, the priority of the project is to farm players.
That's true.
And then if along the way you manage to win trophies, that's a bonus. But the winning trophies aspect is not the priority. Because if I even look at the Rosinha appointment, for example, like if I'm looking at the type of managers Chelsea have hired in the past, and I look at the trajectory of managers you're hiring now, it feels like the level of managers keeps dropping and dropping. Because if you're looking to hire a manager who is going to win things, you would hire someone who has a track record of winning. At the very least, Maresca, you can make an excuse, because it's like people who have worked with Pep at the moment are like hot commodities. Because everybody just thinks that they bring some piece of Pep in coaching to your team. And also, Maresca has also gotten Leicester promoted here.
Let me explain something to you. You see, the problem is that they want to make money. And there's nothing wrong with that. Look, they are a hedge fund. I used to disagree with people a lot about this strategy thing when it was Todd Boehly that was in charge. For Todd Boehly, he's not a hedge fund. Well, he owns a hedge fund, but it's not his hedge fund that bought it. It is him personally that bought it. So
He owns is it LA Dodgers, who are very successful.
He owns Dodgers. He also owns Lakers now. So if it was Todd Boehly that had majority shareholding, that was running the club on a day-to-day,
you don't get it.
No, this
owner, okay, they're finished.
I'm coming. So if it was Todd Boehly, I wouldn't doubt that his ambitions will be more towards football and less through financial. But Alec Bailly is a businessman. And I think a lot of Chelsea fans agree. Look, and he's brought cutthroat business way of doing things into managing a football club. He wants things done his way. The problem is he doesn't have enough experience running or owning any football franchise. You have used the money from Clearly Capital, who have shareholders, to buy Chelsea. That contribution, the shareholders of any hedge fund expect returns. Now, my biggest problem with him is he doesn't see that all your commercial ambitions, wanting to be big commercially, getting big commercial contracts and all those things, lie really with the performance of your team on the pitch. I get it. You want to buy the best in class young players, develop them in-house, have them grow and get the experience together and then win trophies as they go along. I don't dispute. Great strategy. But I know as you are doing that, there must be also a bit of consideration for the now, for the today. So having one or two players that are above 20, like, for instance, Semenyo is a South London. He's not born too far away from Chelsea. Literally. South London born, or whatever, West London born kid, who is now born off up in the market to move and basically says, I don't want to go Chelsea. That's like hearing somebody that was born in Manchester say, I don't want to play for Man United. It pays, oh. It, like, think about what our left-hand side would look like if it wasn't Gittins or Garnacho, but Semenyo there. And look, and Garnacho has not been even that bad since he came in. He has like 7 goal involvement or 8 goal involvement or whatever. He's not been that bad. He has good returns. But there are players that will elevate our team more. And sometimes all you need is to sign such a player. One or two experienced heads just to calm things down when it gets frantic. You know, when the center back has made a mistake and maybe the goalkeeper has bailed him out. Somebody that will just tell everybody, calm down, calm down. Let's just do what the manager said. Pass it, take care of the ball. You know, just help the team along. We've not said fill the team with 28 years. One or two will not hurt the team. But they don't seem to, if you chop 26, like if them see your file or not, then they will talk auto-delete. Then set AI, it will delete your folder. They don't go even scout yourself. And that is where, and for me, I'm just a bit worried because we are going into the fourth year without a front of the shirt sponsor. Like, you can say what?
What's the reason for that? Because I was thinking about
so
that.
So they want big money. The truth is, they want big money. They've been getting offers around 30, 40 million. And truthfully, that does not befit a club like Chelsea. You want to be front of the shirt of Chelsea, you 40 million a year, they can't put down for five years.
If you go to the market and the market say that'll be what they will give you, the market will tell you what's your value.
So that is why they will not, so they will rather not sign. But and
the logic of that is very interesting to me because, like, you've missed out on shared sponsorship money for 4 years just to hold out for a big offer. So, but like, there's money being lost right now.
To be honest,
the money you're losing. It's not like I'm going to get an offer of 200 million a year.
We did, let me put it this way. We did get an offer from Paramount. And then the league blocked it because Paramount was about to be move, they got the rights to the Premier League or somebody like that.
Some conflict of interest.
So they blocked that move. But we had a deal in principle. Then we were about to sign with Oracle. Then I don't know what happened with that too. Like 2 months ago, it was really hot. Like, we are days away from an agreement, and now it just pitted. When we won the Club World Cup, it enhanced the image of the club, especially in America. So there were a lot of American companies that really wanted to invest. But the question is, would they have 400 million or whatever it is that the owners want over the next long-term period? So they say they are doing a lot of things commercially, but we are not signing a lot of high-value. Like, we have the least match day receipts when it comes to all the big six because we have the smallest stadium. They wanted to move Chelsea. The pitch owners say no. The council say no. They wanted to move us to Earls Court, which is maybe 1 mile from Stamford Bridge. They said no. Some consortium has bought it and they're going to develop it into houses and whatever. So there are so many things on the commercial front that's not going well. Well, from a fan's perspective, our books don't look balanced. Every summer, we are looking, okay, we have to sell this, we have to sell that. And we don't want that. You don't have to buy every youngster. Right now, they say we sign some 16-year-old, we go sign some 17-year-old, we go sign some 14-year-old. Somebody, then they born up next week, so if we get, we go sign up. But it's just, I don't get this. I can't see the head and tail of it. Has it yielded some results? Yes, we've won 2 trophies. One of the trophies, we damn right had to win it. We had £1 billion squad playing in the Conference League. If we didn't win it, it would have been a more of a... It was ours to lose. The club, winning the Club World Cup was more of a statement than most people like to accept it to be. But as a Chelsea fan, I understand fully. That is what the level of Chelsea Football Club is. Where we come up against the best of the best, we should be winning those trophies. So we should be able to win the Champions League this year. Or at the very least, going deep, minimum semi-final. Do you see what I mean? Like, the domestic cups. Like, if you don't beat this, bam, bam, play, we go play. I had no doubt we would have beaten Arsenal at Stamford Bridge and tried to work out a draw at Emirates. But now, with the goal there, trailing 3-2. Whether we'll be able to overcome them, well, you have shown us that it's not impossible to win at the Emirates. So, maybe we'll see what's going to happen. But there are so many bits and bobs that is taking place that I just feel like, yes, you want the club to be successful, but you're not moving like somebody that you want the club to be successful. I get it. I know they want the club to be successful. I have no doubt about their ambition. But sometimes your actions and your ambition are so contrary to each other. Mm. It makes us wonder if your ambition is even true. Do you get what I mean?
But, so, you see, here's the thing. When you talk about the ambition and everything, again, back to the Rosinha appointments, because for me, that's not...
As for that one, let me tell you.
It's because they know him from Strasbourg. It makes like departmental transfer or whatever. But
yes, like, you see, let me just add this. Sorry, I just remembered. I see you made a comment about the coaches. You see, hiring a top coach that wins also means surrendering some of the power that these sporting directors and analysts and people have. Do you know right now in Chelsea Football Club, when Maresca left and we found out that when it comes to minutes of players, load and things, it's not decided by the coach. It's decided by the medical department. So the medical department says that Kupama can only play 10 minutes. It's up to you. You can start him, you can bring him in the second half, but the 10 minutes there, that is all he will play. If you override them and play more than that, you will have problems. And those are some of the problems they had with Maresca, where he felt, I've won a trophy, two trophies, so I deserve more power in this club. I deserve more say in how things are done. And you can't come and tell me that some bloke who is a physiotherapist or whatever should be telling me, or a sports scientist should be telling me which players I have available for which game and which players I don't. You see? And that conflict, Maresca went to have Jorge Mendes as his, he joined Jorge Mendes' his company, his agency. And he told them, Juventus are knocking on the door. Man City are talking to me about taking over after Pep. So, if you want me to stay, give me an improved contract and I want this whole medical thing. And then Chelsea got angry and they said, no, we won't give you. So he left. That is I rate it. Manager who stands on business. If you want to, you know, but Rosinha, they had been doing that in Strasbourg. He already knows that the medical team has the final say. So he can pull a squad today. Like today, he played with James right back. Esteban played. I will not be shocked if we go to Napoli and Esteban doesn't play because medical team could tell him, say, the load be too much.
You see, but everything you're saying, for me, it even proves my points because if you are trying to win on a sporting level and you have decisions being taken by non-sporting people and you're prioritizing non-sporting things, like, for me, it doesn't suggest that you're necessarily trying to win. It just means that, like, you're trying to balance everything, or even the balance tilts more towards the business side of things than the sporting side of things. Because again, if you are trying to win, you hire winners. And for me, that's one of the reasons why I always say that if I'm hiring a manager for Man United, the priority is that it's either you're a proven winner, you've managed a big club before, so that you at least know how to manage big club expectations and big club pressure. Or at the very least, you are a club legend, because a club legend has already experienced the big club pressure, at least as a player. And the fans would also be more willing to give you some form of grace, as opposed to if you are just maybe a Rosinha who is just coming as an unknown entity. You don't really have the track record to prove that whatever it is you're trying to do is going to work. So those are the things that I look out for. If you are not a proven winner, at the very least, for me, if you're a club legend, it can make up for the other things because it just gives you more allowance from the fans. So if you don't tick any of those boxes, then it's very hard for me to see it as an ambitious move to hire you, because it just seems like you're just hiring somebody who is just there, like Crack is saying, to be a yes man and just keep their ship going.
I believe every coach is a yes man, but everybody has degrees to it. Because everybody where they work for somebody, if your boss tell you, say, today I won't make you go site, you go tell him, say, you don't go. You go cool.
See,
so everybody is a yes man to a point. But you see, at the end of the day, they want ultimate yes men. They say they want coaches that can collaborate within the setup. Chelsea believe, they believe they have the right environment and the right people in the right areas who will 100% help the club move forward. So right now, all they need is somebody that will coach and listen to the advice of the analysts and the, how do they call them, medical department. If they say Kupama no will play, then Kupama doesn't even come. So today, he's been told he can't play. So he doesn't even make match day squad. They leave him back at home. He's recuperating. If Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever, they say Napoli resumes no free play because he played 65 minutes today, then resumes no go play. Go day bench or you know go. Then we go so you go do a match. So everybody be fit, then good, then you will get. I don't know how that works, but yeah, it's just like, yeah, there are sporting ambition. They believe the collaborative effort will bring you the sporting success that they're looking for. So when everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet, coaches are coaching and developing players, listening to medical advice from medical team and adhering to it. Medical team have the ultimate say about which player plays based on their whatever models or whatever thing. I've never heard of any big club operate like that before. But like, this is where we are, right? This is who Chelsea Football Club is now. I don't know. As US go invade Venezuela, like Africa say, British government, who can't tell Americans, say, make them sell the club. But who do I know?
So anyway, bringing things back home to Africa. Like I said earlier, we missed the entire AFCON tournament, unfortunately. But not to go too much into the tournament, but just to talk about the drama that happened at the final. We saw something that was probably unprecedented in any final that we've ever seen in our lives, when the Senegalese coach ordered his players to walk off the pitch because he felt like they were receiving unfair treatment from the referee, particularly after they disallowed a goal, which to everybody looked like was a valid goal. Like, honestly, the foul that the referee claimed there was, it just wasn't, I don't know what was going on. And then in the end, too, they gave Morocco a penalty, and everybody knows the story of that. Me, I just want to find out from you guys. Obviously, the tournament has ended, the discussions have happened and everything, but particularly on the whole situation of the Senegal coach ordering the players to walk off the pitch. How do you feel about that? Do you think it was the right thing to do? Let me start with Kra.
I've seen European teams do safe. I've seen Messi do it. I've seen Ronaldo do it. I've seen teams do it in Europe. I hate the fact that they are making it look like it's an African team. It's an African team, and I hate it. Yes, it went on for a while. It's the final. The stakes are different. But I've seen it happen. I've seen Ronaldo remove his handband, smash it, and go like, don't play again. I've seen Messi do it against Brazil. Like, it's not me. In a psychological warfare, what you have to do to gain competitive advantage, do it. If it means walking, coming back, do it. Truth be told, me, I wasn't happy because it didn't have to get to that. The referee was a sham. The whole tournament was planned for host and win. Like, you could see it. Yes, we banter Nigeria and all those things, but there were 50-50 balls that were going to Morocco from the Ghanaian referee. If you talk about it, if you talk about here, banter, you talk here. 50-50 balls were going to Morocco. Yes, penalties, Nigeria, do your job. So I'm not going to talk so much about the game. But then, the Senegal game, even watching the match, it felt as if after halftime, the referee was spoken to. Because the first half was a good game where he was like refereeing it well. All of a sudden, the second half, he switches. That goal, that Hakimi, like, first and foremost, Hakimi wasn't looking at the ball. Hakimi was facing the player. That's a wrong position to take. Anything that happens is going to be Hakimi fouling the player. And to take such a soft foul, and for VAR not to even review it, that's criminal. Yes, the Moroccan penalty was a penalty. It was a penalty in any day. That is a penalty. But you cannot disallow that and take this. That's the problem. From you beating Senegal fans, maltreating them, maltreating the players, frustrating them, where they sleep, not allowing them to train, a whole lot of things. This is a tournament that has global accolades that we cherish. That's the pride of African football. And you are deploying such tactics, taking towel away because some people believe there's voodoo. What nonsense. Keeper's towel. You know it was raining that day. Towel that you used to clean. You look at all this nonsense they were doing. I'm not in support of what they did, but I understand why they did that. Because it's deeper than that, because you can't be conditioned, and it happens a lot in Africa. It's like you are conditioned to accept mediocrity, you are conditioned to accept cheating, and you can't challenge the power. Once you challenge the power, hey, you are disrespectful, you are this. But when foreigners do it, they go like, yes, that is culture. They don't do that, they don't stand for this. But when we do it, you are bringing shame. You are disrespecting. You are ruining this. Why? Why can't I stand up? And we see it in our politics. We see it. That's why we have foolish, useless leaders in Africa. We have a culture of not allowing people to speak up. So Senegal doing that, it goes beyond football. I'm telling you, that thing they did over there, it goes beyond just that final match. Because everybody, so the whole of West Africa was supporting Senegal. Just West Africa, the whole of Africa. Because they saw it in a game against Cameroon. Once again, the Ghanaian referee was in the VAR booth. Cameroon, Nigeria, Senegal. Come on. It was so obvious that they wanted to hand the trophy over to Morocco. Do you not organize a brilliant tournament? Absolutely. Because the stadium, top-class stadiums, top-class countries. I mean, the support was massive when they are playing. It was aesthetically pleasing. When you watch, like, you go like, oh, wow, this can actually like battle the European game in the World Cup. Like, you even say that Morocco can actually host the World Cup. And they can. But we show the bad side of Africa by showing that our referees are not ready. That's so people don't understand that that's what we did. We showed our referees are not ready. When we are complaining about these things, it's not just about the country you are coming from. Africa always has to be united. We always have to be united. And when we are putting ourselves out there, we should put the best product out there. Toby, I don't blame Senegal for what they did. As I said, I don't support it because this team might come with sanctions and all of this. But I understand why they did that. And 9 out of 10, if they do it, I will still understand it. Because we all saw the sham of a game this referee was refereeing that day. It was criminal. That's a FIFA approved referee. This guy. Go and check all, like, the last game he ref was, I think the Moroccan, like, prior to this, he hadn't refed any game before. The last game he refed was a Rubu. I saw some rumors they were saying that he was married to a Moroccan. I remember those things can come. right? All those things can happen. I say he's married to, he stays in Morocco, married to a Moroccan. I don't believe those things. But come on. Like, and I hate the fact that people are trying to shit on AFCON because of that final and all, forgetting that we see them do it all the time. Like, we see Europeans do it and it's okay. But it's hard time we need to fix our home and fix ourselves, because we showed a brilliant AFCON and we nearly made it with cheating. So that's what I have to say.
Mangiora, how do you feel about the whole situation?
I think it's very unfortunate, just as Cracker said. It marred the end of a very... To be honest, I didn't think this AFCON was better than the one we watched in Ivory Coast. Just maybe it was just... I thought the one in Ivory Coast had more jeopardy. Like, the smaller teams were more up for it and, you know, they were, like, really, really going at the, how do you call it, the, you know, the bigger teams, and there was a lot more chaos, and I liked that more. But it was very obvious. And, I mean, for someone like, for referee Laye, who is probably Ghana's best referee, it's unfortunate for him to find himself in such a situation, right? That, I don't know. I wouldn't say that the Moroccan officials got to him, but I feel it was more so the crowd, like, refereeing in such a huge stadium with so many huge, and, you know, having those, crack, you can do your face all you want, but I just, no, think about it. We as you, the guy, the last AFCON wins on referee end the game, like, 5 minutes before time. It was the crowd get to make it end. He said, hey, time not finished. Sorry. So it happens, you know, and I feel like that is, but even with the organization of the AFCON, why is it that every other team has to travel around the country, but Morocco played in one stadium, in one city, from start to finish? Why? Why? They could have also, it's their own country. They could have traveled about Rabat, Casablanca.
No. But when we hosted in 2008, didn't we play all our games in Accra Sports Stadium?
Did we?
Yeah. I think the whole idea of that thing is that the stadiums are already set before the game. So, for example, if maybe somehow Morocco finishes second in their group, then that's when they would have had to go somewhere else, because that other quarterfinal or round of 16 game would have been scheduled for another venue. But as long as you keep winning, you are going to stay in the same stadium. That's just the whole idea.
Fair point. But again, my point still remains. It just, as Cracker said, it just felt like they just wanted Morocco to win. You know, Morocco has won under 21. They've won women's one. They've won this, they've won that. So the one that they've not won is the men's AFCON. So it's like, we have to win it for them. And Senegal scores a perfectly good goal. Then they say it's a foul. Then they give a dubious penalty. Then thankfully, Brahim Diaz is stupid enough to try to Panenka the keeper. And then justice is served. Whether I agree, Crack, that there might be some sanctions that come Senegal's way, which then means that maybe their performance at the World Cup is affected. I don't know how that's going to go, because they can decide that, FIFA can decide that the coach is banned for a year. Half of the players are banned for, then Senegal must put together a whole new team to go to the World Cup with a new coach or something like that. I don't know how that's going to pan out. But that incident is perfectly understandable. I think it would have, maybe one can argue that maybe in Europe it might not happen if players feel like they've been, even if they've been wrongfully done by. But South America definitely would have happened. If it was Argentina playing against Brazil or something, and then they feel like, Massa, we are walking off. Oh yeah, Otilo, let's go. Do you get it? So it's just unfortunate.
Hey, but Vangada, let me draw your attention to something. Mm-hmm. I saw a tweet today that the Nigerians, their third place, this one, they didn't give it to them. Their medal.
Their medal. Why?
That is, and it's true.
As in, they forget it, and we give you what.
Be you like, know when you know after the finals, the third place comes to take their medal.
I don't remember seeing them.
Yeah, actually,
no.
That's
so
true.
I was like, so when I saw it, you see that Arabian commentator, when they were, so I went on his timeline and I was translating some of his tweets, and he was very critical of what was going on. And he said, and I was like, so I went back to go and check, and it's true.
Maybe they ship them, give them.
So that's what I say that, guy, no, the whole thing, and they were focusing on Morocco. The yes. whole thing, they were focusing on Morocco. Everything was a shambles. Like, they were focusing on Morocco. They didn't even think they would be second. Mm-hmm. Everything was planned.
Me, I'll just go a bit against what you guys are saying. Like, I understand the whole frustration of believing that you're cheated and all of that. But for the purposes of preventing this from becoming a regular occurrence, I think FIFA needs to come down hard on them. Whether it's FIFA or CAF, they need to come down hard on them. Because if you allow this to happen, it's just going to open up a whole new can of worms that you can never put back in. Every time anybody feels like they are cheated, and that's a problem. This time, Senegal was cheated, yes. And we could all see that they were cheated. But another time, a team is going to believe that they were cheated. It doesn't mean that they were actually cheated, but as long as they believe that they were cheated, they are going to feel like they also have the right to do this. And that's where the problem comes. So if they want to prevent this thing from becoming a regular occurrence, because Africa, they will know how to take things to the next level, you need to come down hard on them. Like the coach in particular, for the fact that he's the one who ordered his players to leave the pitch. Him there, I'll be very surprised if he's available for the World Cup. Because I don't know how many competitive games they have to play between now and the World Cup. But if he's going to be given any reasonable punishment, at the very least, he foresees on 5 games or 6 games or something. And which would put him probably out of the World Cup. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't know how many competitive games will be played between now and then. The players, I don't know how
do they count how did they call them say? Do they count friendlies as competitive matches?
No. No.
Because if they do, like if I'm in Senegal, I just gotta rain some quick 5.
Even if that one was going to happen, the friendlies have to fall within FIFA approved windows. But because remember, like, was it like Kingston who missed the World Cup because he had a 3-game suspension or somebody like that? So yeah, at the very minimum, he foresees on 5 games or something, just for the fact that he's the one who called his players off the pitch. The players is where that one it becomes more dicey, because what are you going to do? Are you going to ban the whole team? That one, I think maybe a fine will suffice or something. But the coach is the easiest person to ban. That one, just like something has to happen for that one. But yes, we can all agree that the refereeing throughout the tournament, it made it clear that there was a plan in place for Morocco to win the tournament. Now, I don't think anybody can deny that. But just for the purposes, sometimes life, it don't be fair like that. It make like if referee make a wrong decision, player show descent, he go throw the ball in frustration. The player, they collect yellow card, even though the referee truly make mistake. Sometimes it's just for the purposes of not making it become a regular occurrence. So, yeah, in the end, justice prevailed in the bigger picture because Senegal won the tournament. We are all happy. Everybody was supporting Senegal. And Mane gets to, I think Mane, this was his last AFCON. So he cements his place as arguably, like, right now, there's an argument being made for him to be the greatest African player of all time. I still don't know where I stand on that one. But, I mean, right now, on top of him winning
serious,
two
AFCONs. He's a serious talk and do. That'd be all I know.
Yeah. What I would say is that the whole situation of him being the only person staying on the pitch and then pulling his teammates out back onto the pitch, it has added to his legacy a bit. Because the Europeans, they've really bought into that whole thing. Like, they have seen this, like, Mane is this, like, freedom fighter figure. Like, if you listen to all the podcasts with the Europeans talking about him, like, my mind busts in that whole situation, because it's just boosted his image in their eyes in terms of his leadership and everything. So, yeah, like, I feel like even though this whole thing, to some extent, it's marred the ending of the tournament, I think there are some positives to take out of it. And that is definitely one of them. So, we've come to the end of this episode. Before I end things, let me just give a shout out to Jesse Reese. His account is logged on Twitter.
Hey, make I tell you, it's Dr. Jesse Reese. That'll be my boy. My boy be that.
Okay. Dr. Jesse Reese.
Yeah.
His Twitter is logged, so not many people would probably come across his account at any point. But if you are looking for people who are part of the reason why we've come out of our long break, he's one of the reasons, because he'd be one of the people who they harass me for the comments inside in our mentions on Twitter. And I mean, he's not the only one. There are a number of people who have done that, and it's understandable because we've been away for a long time. But his one is the one that's really triggered us to come back. So yeah, shout out to Jesse Reese. Like, we are going to try and be more consistent, because it looks like this year it started with a bang with all the huge footballing news that's just been hitting us back to back to back. I was even hoping we could discuss the whole Xabi Alonso situation and all the other big
killer them sack him, they sack him.
there's been so much news to cover, like, in this time that we've gone on break, but hopefully, like, we'll touch on everything as the weeks go by. So, Charlie, if you haven't done this already, follow our social media pages: Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast, GCR, TikTok, After the Whistle. Subscribe to the YouTube. We beg you, ask you to talk, say, make we come back. Go subscribe to the YouTube. So, say, we go chop the money some. Today, I see, what's this guy's name? This UK, KSI's YouTube revenue. The guy is making $100,000 a month just from YouTube.
Charlie, them people, they don't do 9-to-5, but they do 24/7.
Some of us, we just want like 5% of that. We just want 5%. That'd be all.
Make me take shots, people.
Just take shots. That'd be all. So yes, please, just subscribe to the YouTube. Share the links when you watch the YouTube. Leave comments. All those things help to the episode to be recommended to other people. But if YouTube is too much of a hassle for you, we still have the Apple, we still have the Spotify, we still have Amazon. Anywhere you go find podcasts, we did it. So yeah, once again, Charlie, guys, thank you. Hopefully, next few episodes, we will have more of the other guys coming back. So CD to them also will come share them at thoughts, because Fred Liverpool the killer, so I'm sure he has a lot to say.
Slot ball and his slot ball.
So anyway, ATW dominates the conversation.